Covetousness makes you miserable. Miserable. Now here's a man that was king of Israel. He had everything. He could have everything he wanted. King Ahab. But because one man wouldn't sell him his little vineyard. Now he had horses. He had chariots. He had food. He had servants. He had, you know, all kinds of things. He had vineyards himself, but he wanted this one little vineyard. And the man said, no, that's in my family. I can't sell it to you. And I want that. And I can't be happy until I get it. So here was King Ahab, made himself miserable, had to, you know, have his wife take care of things by suborning witnesses and killing Naboth unrighteously. You know, in the book of Joshua, we find another case of covetousness, people who want things they shouldn't have. In the book of Joshua, chapter 7, you remember the story of the battle for the city of Ai. Ai, as it's spelled. And they were forbidden, you know, to take any of these things. God said, I don't want you to take any of the silver, any of the gold, any of the jewelry, any of it. Don't take any of it. Just destroy it. And a man by the name of Achan, A-C-H-A-N, said, you know, he took some. And Joshua said when they went up against the group to fight, they were defeated. Joshua couldn't believe it. This small group of people that they were going to fight against won the battle. And Joshua was completely discouraged. He said, well, Lord, what happened? You know, you're supposed to protect us. You're supposed to give us the battle. And he couldn't understand it. And the Eternal said, someone has taken the forbidden things. The things that were not supposed to be taken. And so Joshua said, you know, well, what, who am I, how am I going to find it? And God said, bring them in tribe by tribe. And they brought through the tribes. The tribe of Judah then was chosen. And then they brought in the clans, and a certain clan was chosen. And then they brought the families, and the family of Zimri was chosen. And finally, it came right down to the men, people of the Zimri, and the man Achan was chosen. And here's what Joshua asked him about it. And Achan replied, this is Joshua chapter 7, verse 20. And Achan replied, it is true. I'm reading this from the New International Version. It is true, I have sinned against the Eternal, the God of Israel. This is what I have done. When I saw in the plunder a beautiful robe from Babylon, 200 shekels of silver, and a wedge of gold weighing 50 shekels, I coveted them and took them. They are hidden in the ground inside my tent with the silver underneath. And you know what happened to him? Because he was responsible for the death of some soldiers from Israel, he forfeited his life for that. You also remember the case of, in the New Testament, Ananias and Sapphira in chapter 5 of the book of Acts. I'm going to read that beginning in verse 1. This is again from the New International Version. Now a man named Ananias, together with his wife Sapphira, also sold a piece of property. With his wife's full knowledge, he kept back part of the money for himself. Now what he did, he sold the property. He said, I'm going to donate this property to the Lord. I'm going to donate this. Well, what he did, he kept back part of the price, but he told them, this is all I got for the property. He kept back piece part of the property for himself, but brought the rest and put it in front of the apostles' feet. Then Peter said to Ananias, how is it that Satan has so filled your heart that you have lied to the Holy Spirit and have kept for yourself some of the money you received for the land? Didn't it belong to you before it was sold? And after it was sold, wasn't the money at your own your disposal? You could have done with it what you wanted. What made you think of doing such a thing? You have not lied to men, but to God. And then, of course, he passes out dead, and they carry him out. Now, the thing of it is that he wanted everyone to think he was donating the full amount while he kept back some for himself. You know, I'm going to keep it back. So You could do with it what you want, but why do you want to say, I sold the property, I'm giving it all? In the book of Esther, you'll remember, here's a similar story. It's sort of like the story of Ahab. In this case, it was a man by the name of Haman. Now, this Haman rose up. You know, he must have had some very great qualities as a person. He worked in the administration of the Persian Empire under, you know, the Ahasuerus. And here was Esther there. But Haman was, he'd worked himself well. And people all over, man, he worked up to the top of the chain of authority. People all over bowed and scraped. They honored him. Yes, Haman's coming. They'll give him a... There was one stiff-necked Jew that wouldn't do it. His name was Mordecai. Now, everybody else is bowing and scraping, and Mordecai just walks by and, hi. And he won't bow, he won't scrape, he won't genuflect or anything like that. This troubled Haman. It so enraged Haman that he forgot about all the thousands who did bow to him. Everybody else was bowing. But he focused on one guy who wouldn't bow. I want that guy to bow. He better bow. And what did he do? He ended up losing his own life. he designed a plot, and the plot turned wrong, and he ended up dying himself because of it. Because of his own covetousness, because of his own greed, because of his own vanities. And you'll remember the case of Saul and with the Amalekites. And God told Saul, I'll give you the victory of the Amalekites. But what I want you to do is destroy everything. Kill all. It's interesting in the Bible. Sometimes God allowed them to take some of the treasure, and sometimes God asked them to destroy it all. So here was Saul. He was told, destroy all the sheep, destroy all the things, destroy everything that you got from the Amalekites. I don't want anything. I don't want any of you touching any of their stuff. So when Samuel comes to him, it was a great victory. Saul got the victory over the Amalekites. And Samuel comes down and he says, did you do what God said? He said, yes, I have. I've done it all. I did what God said. I destroyed them. Samuel said, what do I hear? These sheep, bleeding. I hear all these sheep, And why am I hearing that? Oh, Saul said, I just kept back some of this. And this is what, let me read this. This is in 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 9. But Saul and the army spared Agag. He spared the king. And he spared, in verse 9, this is 1 Samuel 15, verse, and the best of the sheep and cattle, the fat calves and the lambs. He destroyed the sick ones, the skinny ones, the ones that didn't look good. And he destroyed all those. And he kept everything that was good. Okay? He was unwilling then, to completely destroy everything. And so he said, you were unwilling to destroy everything completely, but everything was despised and weak. He totally destroyed. And what does Samuel ask him? Why did you not obey? This is 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 19. Why did you not obey the Eternal? Why did you pounce? This is the way the New International reads it. Why did you pounce on the plunder and do evil in the sight of the Eternal? So he sees all these good sheep. Well, that's a good healthy one. These are good cows. These are good. This is good. Oh, grab that. Let's take that. And there's some gold here. Grab that. Take that. This is how the New American Standard Version reads it, 1 Samuel 15, verse 19. Why then did you not obey the voice of the Eternal, but rushed upon the spoil and did what was evil? You couldn't wait to get your hands on all that, those good animals. And in the Revised Standard Version, it reads it like this, 1 Samuel 15, verse 19. Why then did you not obey the voice of the Eternal? Why did you swoop down on the spoil and do what was evil. You swooped down on the spoil. You swooped down on the spoil and did what was evil in the sight of the Eternal. That's 1 Samuel 15, verse 19. And one of the great, great examples of covetousness was a man who had spent 3 years, 3.5 years with Jesus Christ, walking with him, talking with him, being with him, seeing what he did. And here we have it in Matthew chapter 26, verses 14 and 15. Then one of the 12, a man called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and asked, "What are you willing to give me if I hand him over to you?" What are you willing to give me? I'll get him to you. I'll betray him. I'll turn him to you. So they counted out for him 30 silver coins. And verse 16, this is Matthew 26, verse 16. From that time, from then on, Judas watched for an opportunity to hand him over. Or betray him. The word betray is the same word. It means hand over. Hand him over. I want to hand him over to them. So we see examples of covetousness leading to various terrible things. Treason, betrayal, murder, lies. Saul couldn't even see it. He was so blinded with his covetousness. And when Samuel said, "Why didn't you obey God?" He said, "Well, I did. I just kept the good ones. I did obey God. Shame to waste those good sheep and cattle, you know." In the book of 2 Peter, this is how they sum up the story of Balaam. You remember the story of Balaam in the Old Testament, the book of Numbers. But here's how the New Testament sums it up in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 15. "They have left the straight way and wandered off to follow the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of wickedness." In the book of Jude, in verse 11, Jude chapter 1, verse 11, "Woe to them! They have taken the way of Cain. They have rushed for profit into Balaam's error, and they have been destroyed in Korah's rebellion." Yes, covetousness makes for misery, and covetousness leads practically to every kind of wrongdoing. Covetousness is the fountain from which flow so many poisonous streams. And the one who violates this law, "Thou shalt not covet," that is, want the wrong things, is likely to violate almost every other law. Covetousness also leads to lying, bearing false witness, murder. Think of it. The wife of another, to covet somebody else's wife is to become an adulterer. Every pickpocket, think about it, is doing what? Coveting. Every gangster, every thief, con artist, schemer is filled with illicit plans to try to bilk people out of their money because of covetousness. They covet. Not only may a covetous person become a liar, adulterer, trickster, thief, but again and again, he also can become a murderer. Think about people who kidnap someone else. They kidnap them. They intend to get money, and usually they end up murdering the person. They're willing to murder this person if I don't get the money. Kidnapping, rape, murder are all forms of covetousness. Covetousness is deadly, and it leads to it's deadly even if it doesn't lead to an outward deed. You know, you say, "Well, you know, maybe it leads to murder, but I can covet, I don't do anything about it." But it's deadly. It becomes rottenness inside you. It destroys the love for what is best. You remember Jesus was preaching one day, and he was talking about the Holy Spirit. And this is in the book of Luke. Okay, here's Jesus preaching in Luke chapter 12, beginning in verse 12. And he's talking to various ones. He says, "And when they bring you before the synagogues and the rulers and the authorities, do not worry about what, how, or what you are to speak in your defense, or what you are to say, for the Holy Spirit will teach you in that very hour what you are to say." Now, that was verse 12. This is Luke chapter 12 and verse 12. Now we're coming down to verse 13. Someone in the crowd. Now here he's talking about the Holy Spirit giving you information for what you want to do. And verse 13, someone in the crowd shouts out, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." And Jesus, I mean, here you're talking about the spiritual things, high important things, the Holy Spirit. And what does somebody in the crowd thinking? He's not thinking about what Jesus is talking about, the Holy Spirit giving you what you will say in that day, helping you to come to defend yourself against rulers, and you're captured in front of people and you got to make a stand and you don't know what you're going to say, but the Holy Spirit will guide you. No, they're not thinking about the Holy Spirit. This guy says, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide an inheritance with me." He's thinking all this time Jesus is talking about covetousness. And he said to him, and Jesus then says to the man, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbitrator over you? That's not my job." But verse 15, and then he said to them, "Beware and be on your guard against every type of greed, for even when one has an abundance, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." So our lives, we have to have, our first thing is to put our thoughts on God first. Now the word greed here in the statement that Jesus mentions is a different word. It's not epithumia, which means covetousness. It's pleonexia. Now, whereas the Greek word and the Hebrew word for strictly covetous can be meaning an earnest desire. I can really want to, I desire this, as the prodigal son desired to eat the food that was given to the pigs, the carob pods. As the Lazarus, the poor beggar in front of the rich man's house desired. He wanted earnestly, if I could just get the scraps they throw away. Nobody wants them, but I'll eat them. I would like to have the scraps off a rich man's table. So that word can go either way. It can have a bad form of coveting what you don't have, what you don't have a right to have. Now, sometimes we have a right to have. We have a right to have a good job. We have a right to have nice things or clothing and these things. That's fine. We don't have a right to have what other people have. It's not, I want his thing. I want his possessions. No. The word, however, pleonexia, pleonexia, that's the Greek word that means, it's translated greed. It means the state of desiring to have more than one's due. Greediness, insatiableness, avarice. And sometimes it's translated covetousness, but it's a different word from the general word for covetousness. It's I can't get enough. I want everything. I want everything. I want everything. It's fine. We all want, in America, what we would like to have, some place to live. We'd like to have a piece of land of our own, generally. We'd like to have some clothing. We like to have a car, transportation. We'd like to have some food on the table. But we can't have all the food in the world. We can't have all the cars in the world. We can't have all the clothing in the world. We can't have all the property in the world. No, we just have ours, and that's fine. It's when people want everything. I want to own it all. I want to have just a mass of everything for me. This pleonexia word is used in the book of Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 19. Ephesians 4, verse 19. And they having become callous, this is Paul writing to the Ephesians, having become callous, have given themselves over to sensuality for the practice of every kind of impurity with pleonexia, with greediness. They're practicing every kind of sensuality and impurity with the greed. You know, you could say this about the organized crime. Organized crime cannot get enough. They cannot. They just want to get more and more. They want to buy more and increase more and have more. I think many of them have found a way to do things that are legal now because they got enough money they can invest in hotels and casinos and they're, you know, just have more and more money. But at first, it was a way of practicing every kind of evil. They give themselves to sensuality, impurity, that is uncleanness of every kind, impurity, and with, on top of that, they bring along with greediness, the pleonexia. Twice over, Paul tells us that covetousness is a form of idolatry. And the word he uses here is pleonexia. Covetousness, pleonexia. Greed is idolatry. Let me read it in the book of Ephesians. Chapter 5. He used it again, chapter 5, verse 3. But immorality, that is fornication or sexual sins, or impurity, or greed, pleonexia, must not even be named among you as is proper among saints. And there must be no filthiness or silly talk or coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know, with certainty, that no immoral or impure person or covetous man. Now, it's translated covetous man, but the word is pleonexia man. He is a greedy man, pleonexia man. No person who is a pleonexia man, who is an idolater, has an inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Because the pleonexia man cannot think of anything but his getting more, getting greed. You know, now, is it right if you work, you purchase, you put things aside, you earn good money? Is that fine for you to have more things? That's fine if you want to. I mean, you're not doing. But to have, I just can't get enough, is a form of idolatry. The man who worships mammon cannot properly worship God. We can't worship the physical things. Can't worship the things that we have. We can't worship things in the physical things. The Apostle James declares that the covetous man, the man who puts the world first, is hostile to God. He says the friendship of the world is enmity. This is James 4:4 with God. So we see the pleonexia man, verse 5, for this reason, no certainty that no immoral, impure, or pleonexia man, covetous man, who is an idolater. Yes, covetousness makes fellowship with Jesus Christ impossible. In our next sermon, we're going to talk about how do we conquer it. It's in us. It can be in us. How do we conquer it? How do we get rid of this thing of covetousness? What do we do to replace it? We'll talk about that in our next sermon.